I am so grateful already for the positive responses to James Tripp and his appearance on this show. Thank you. Thank you for your positive reviews from part one. Make sure, if you enjoyed the conversation, go to ratethispodcast.com/openloops. I am so grateful for that. You know, the more subscribes and times you can share this and ratings and things you can say about the show, even a couple of words, it really helps facilitate getting these conversations in the consciousness of the people. Speaking of which, what about your consciousness? And what about what it actually requires for being in the process of creating results in a non-linear way? How do you deal with the contingencies? How do you know where to focus, where not to focus? And also, what does James Tripp believe is the winning strategy for winning the game of wealth? You'll notice in his answer, he never said, start a fringe podcast. Doesn't matter. You're here anyways. It's part two of our short series, Inner Games of Creation, a Nonlinear Approach to Results with hypnotist James Tripp. I'm Greg Bornstein, consciousness disruptor and cultural hypnotist. All coming up now on Open Loops. What even do you, when do you know that you have clarity on who it is you want to be? I mean, is that a felt sense thing? Is that okay? Because I know Kendrick Cleveland, he was actually the first person that I heard of the Be Do Have model from.
Okay.
And he did a whole thing on, and I know you kind of dispelled this, but he did the old, the equation, the, you know, B equals do plus have, or I think what he said is B plus do equals have. I think that was the kind of tweak he made. And his whole thing was, you know, we're going to, classic self-hypnosis process, figure out who you want to figure out a being statement. So I am, in his case, he was teaching persuasion. I am the master persuader that moves minds effortlessly with a full mastery of language patterns. And this kind of, like, you actually define it. You wrote it out. And then
I do that. I do that too.
Okay, so you do believe that at some level, because I'm wondering then, when you are someone that doesn't necessarily know what you want to create, what you really want to create, what are helpful being places to be in? Is it
first of all, let go of that really wants to create.
Right?
Because this is a sucker's game, in my view, right? I think that, but what do I really want? It's always a sucker's game. Now, sucker's game is a game that you can't win.
Yes.
Right? So, like, what if there was no really one? One of the things I often do with clients is I say, like, what would just be cool? What would be fun? You know, what would be mildly interesting? What would be like, you know, because here's the thing. When we do things when we're kids, we mostly do what we do because we just go, oh, that would be great. That would be cool. That would be awesome. Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that. We're not even thinking about it. We're just captured. Our imagination's captured. We don't analyze it. We never analyze it. We just go, yeah. But then we learn that, oh, no, you've only got to, you should be doing important things.
Yes, the right? Shoulds.
Yes, the shoulds. So then we start analyzing it. It's not enough to go, oh, yeah, that would be cool. No, that's childish. We've got to be grown up and adult and go, hang on, but is this the right thing to do? Now, that's the problem. That's where we stop coming from inspiration and vision and enthusiasm. And we start going, yeah, but let me, I've got to analyze this to see if it's the correct thing or the right thing, or if it really is, you know, and all of that stuff, I think is crap. And it doesn't,
right.
It just doesn't help people. So like one of the things that I'm often doing with people is going, you know, what would be cool? You know, forget everything. It's just like, what would be, for the most childish reasons, what would be cool?
So then the being would be, and that's what I wanted to ask. Then would the person that you would quote unquote be, I am able, I would love to live in a place where, or say I am the creator of things I find cool.
Yeah. So like you might do something like that, you know, as a being. So now this is what I would call a white path self creation. Right. So I would be going, I am that I love creating. I am that I love creating cool things. I am the me that creates cool things. Right. Now, when I'm doing this, if I'm doing something like this, if I'm doing these I am statements, the important thing is that you resonate with them, and the feeling in the body is one of expansiveness and more power. Right?
Yeah.
If you're doing a self-creation statement and you go, you were saying, you know, let's say, I am a creative genius. I am that I live through my creative genius. I enjoy experiencing my creative genius daily. But the energy of those statements is what counts, and you resonate, you feel expanded by them. If you're running statements like that, and there's a part of you that's going, no, you're not. You're not, yeah. Yeah, but are you really? I don't think you are. But this, now you are, remember this distinction from earlier, arguing about what is or isn't so versus playing with meaning, making, and possibility.
Mm.
Right? Because this is what most people do when they start to do self-creation statements. They drop into arguing about what is or isn't so, instead of just being light and playful, like a kid. When a kid wants to, you know, when I was a kid and I was playing Indiana Jones, I was in the feeling of being Indiana Jones. I wasn't up in my head going, yeah, but you're not really Indiana Jones, are you?
Right. You know,
so this is the thing. Kids know how to do this, but we get schooled out of it. You see?
For sure.
So again, arguing about what is or isn't so, that is not the realm of creation. Never. Never. The realm of creation is exploration, is play, is connection, is coming alive with things, is vision, is enthusiasm, is all of this stuff. It's got nothing to do with correctness, rightness, wrongness, the truth, the none of that. That is not the realm of creation.
That makes a lot of sense. I wonder then when you need to start going into the black path stuff, which you've talked about as being more of the rewriting the beliefs and clearing out what some would call blocks. You know, I mean, when is there a certain point? Because I'm sitting here going, wow, yeah, I am that. I create cool things. I'm gonna go do it. But then, you know, again, overthinking mind is going like, yeah, but do I really need to, should I clear out all the crap first so I can accelerate, or can I just move into it?
No, just move into it. And then the crap will show itself.
Ah.
So that the best way to find out what your crap is that you want to clear out is not to go off and go, well, I'm going to go do this deep exploration into my crap. It's just to get on with creating, and your crap will show up. You can guarantee it. Right? It's going to show up because that part of you that wants to have you lay low or play small or whatever, or be safe rather than be bold, it's going to show up and try and stop you. It's going to show up and create feelings of hesitation. It's going to create little arguments of self-doubt. It's going to try and talk you down, all of that kind of stuff. Right? You know, sometimes in the past, I've said that when I'm coaching people, really my job is just to ally with their bigness. Rather than ally with their smallness, because most of the time they're allying with their smallness, and their friends and family are as well. Not intentionally, but they're going, oh, are you sure that's a good idea? Well, you know, well, make sure you think about it carefully before you do it. And what they're saying is there's danger there, and don't get too big for your boots, and don't, you know. So people tend to get caught up playing small. That is playing safe, not bold.
Yeah.
Now, Yeah, go on.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead. I keep going. I'm loving
so,
it.
Yeah, I'm just, I, so this is the thing. It's like these things, these limitations, the smallness, the voice of smallness, the yeah, but voice, the yeah, but, you know, but is it really, oh, but maybe you should do this before, you know, make sure. It's the voice of safety. It's the voice of security. It's the voice of don't rock the boat. It's the voice of don't do anything too dangerous. Now that voice, that doesn't live in creation. That lives in, no, we do need to know what is or isn't so, because there are dangerous things out there and we need to avoid them. And we need to make sure that we don't get in over our heads and make a fool of ourselves and all of this sort of stuff. Now, I'm not saying there's no value to that. It's not that simple. It's not like, right, that just holds you back. There's a tram that goes past my apartment. I never step out in front of it. So in that instance, I'm happy to go with my limitation that I would come off worse in a collision with the tram. You see? Mm. But I want to be able to look other places in my life, because I go, well, you know, if somebody said step out in front of the tram, I go, no way. Because I believe that it's going to kill me. If somebody says, why don't you go for that like big contract with that organization to coach their exec team? If I went, oh no, you know, I'm not sure if I'm ready for that. I might embarrass myself. Hang on a second. I want to be able to look at that and go, is this equivalent to stepping out in front of the tram? Am I really at risk here? What is the risk that I'm perceiving? So I want to know my story. I want to know how I create the fear. I want to know how I create, hear this language, how I create hanging back.
Right.
And I want to be able to look at that and go, and how's that serving me, that hanging back? Now, if I ask myself the question, how's it serving me not stepping in front of the tram? I'd be like, yeah, I think that's serving me pretty well. But if I've constantly talked myself down, you know, maybe if I wanted to write a book for years, or I wanted to start a business for years, or I wanted, and I kept talking myself down. If I ask myself, how's that serving me? Well, the answer is, I'm not sure it's serving me too well. And here's another way you can tell. You ask yourself about the default future. If I keep living like this, what is the future that this creates? And do I want this? Right?
Right.
And if you go, no, I don't, then you go, okay, then this set of beliefs, this belief structure here is not serving me in being who I want to be or need to be to create the stuff that I would love to bring into the world. Right. So you get, this is where you're doing the black path stuff. The black path stuff is looking at existing belief structures and being able to, instead of just being caught up in the trance of them, be able to shine the spotlight of consciousness on them and bring your critical faculty to bear upon them and look at them in a variety of different ways and figure out whether or not these are bringing you closer to you at your best, you know, bringing you further into your potential and into possibility, making you bigger or making you smaller.
Right. Right. I mean, this is, that's good. The bigger or smaller thing I think that's super key. This sense of expansiveness, that you're speaking of, because I was going to say this. I mean, I've heard you mention, reading Richard Branson's autobiography before.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm putting this in the question of, you know, when does James Tripp, or when is it best suited to say, hey, I'm done creating this thing I thought was cool. What are the right reasons? Because Richard Branson has an idea. He calls up a friend, he tries to make it happen. Me, and this is something I really want to shed, I have millions of ideas that just come in all the time, and then I take the extra minute to start thinking about those ideas and talk it all sounds so great at inspiration, and then once I start envisioning the reality of how much investment I would have to then have in this idea and what the day-to-day business life of that idea. I mean, that's the thing with hypnosis, right? People are, it's so sexy to go into mind tech and then, oh yeah, but actually most of the work is getting clients, and then it becomes this, it stopped me. I mean, that's a constant internal game that I'm playing of inspiration meets, but do you know what the reality of that looks like? And I wonder when it's just black path work versus, okay, well, look, I did start, because I remember, like, for you, for instance, you were going to start a podcast last year.
Yeah.
And I'm now going, huh, he didn't do that, but it seemed like he was very inspired. I'm curious, you know, was that intentionally dropped in a way that was healthier?
Yeah, it was intentionally dropped, very, very intentionally dropped, because the guy that I got in with to produce it, and I really enjoyed some of the process of producing it. He turned out to be less than competent. And also, in spite of my best efforts to encourage him to be entirely transparent, he lied to me a lot about a lot of things. So that project, we recorded several episodes of it. And they recorded on multiple cameras, and they never got edited up. So I've still got the raw footage and nobody to edit it. And there's no point editing it because I'm not going to continue with that production team. So basically the production team didn't come together and I moved on to other things. Now I may at some point do that project again, but I did get quite a long way into the action of it before going, I'm dropping this one.
Okay.
So but going back to you, Greg, you were saying you get the idea and you get the inspiration, and then you talk yourself down.
Yeah.
Right. Now that is, for me, I'm very interested in this. And this, like, what you want to be able to do is you want to be able to know yourself. So when I'm asking myself a question, how am I creating that? I'm not asking myself that question from a place of judgmentalism or wanting to castigate myself or come to any conclusions about what it means about me as a person that I did that or didn't do that. I just want to be able to evaluate what's happening, look to see what's there. So in this instance, I'd go, oh, okay. So what I do is I get the idea, I get inspired by it, and then I get into this thought process that kills it immediately.
Yes.
So how's that working out for me?
Right.
What's my default future if I continue to do this? So the thing is, it's like, okay, I need something different here. That's not working out. That is not how creators create. I did a video years ago called A Single Idea Can Destroy an Entire Business. And it was on exactly this thing. It was on exactly this point, how, you know, I had a friend of mine years ago. He was always coming up with ideas for businesses and then he never did them. I'd say, how come you didn't go ahead with that? Well, you know, it would have been like this. Never took any action. He created it and destroyed it in his own mind before anything ever happened in the world. Right?
Yeah.
So there's a line from Steve Jobs. He says, you cannot connect the dots looking forward, only looking backward. If you know that, and this is one of the reasons why I'm not a big fan of plans and task lists and all of that kind of stuff, because I know what it does for me. For somebody else, it might work great. But if I start to get into the minutiae of what I think needs to happen, i.e. I try to connect the dots looking forward, what usually happens is the energy drains out of the idea and then it doesn't help me create, right? So, and again, going back to that last video I put up, it's why I love action so much. I love action. And I mentioned in that video something I didn't talk about, the idea of action cascades.
Yeah, I was wondering what that term meant.
So what I mean by an action cascade is action begets action. It's like once a domino goes over, the next domino goes over, right? So the whole domino chain goes down. So if I'm doing the Branson and I go, oh, that would be cool, and I immediately start having conversations with people about it, then I've taken action. And I'm taking action from a place of inspiration. I'm not going into technical analysis about what needs to happen and putting a bunch of tasks out in the future and burying myself immediately in a mountain of hard work in my imagination alone, right? Mm-hmm. So at the moment, I'm working with somebody and we're developing some leadership development offerings. We're in the early stages. But we've had several meetings. We're co-creating it. The creative juices are flowing. We're kicking stuff backwards and forwards. It came out of me picking up the phone spontaneously because I had an idea. And now we're co-creating something. Now, all creation is co-creation. All creation. So if you try and create up in your head without taking action, then you're not co-creating with the world. Okay? Mm-hmm. This is really important to understand. I used to be a musician. I suppose some people might argue, no, I used to be a musician. If I started playing instruments again, I can play instruments, but I don't play enough. So I wouldn't call myself a musician at the moment. But I used to be a musician and I used to be a song creator, a music creator. Now, no, I don't say songwriter because I never wrote anything. But I would sit down with other musicians sometimes on my own. But if I was on my own, I had to have a recording studio to be in because I needed to lay things down in order to interact with those things. So for me, creating a piece of music is a good template for creating anything. I was talking the other day about this. There's a particular song that I'm using the vernacular, song that I wrote. I didn't write it. I created it. But it was based off an Italian ambulance siren. So I was in Florence in Italy, and I'm like, I hear this unusual siren. It goes, I said, that's more musical than our sirens. Now, a lot of people could dismiss that and go, that's not a very good piece of music. I'm like, that's interesting. I'm going to play with that. So I kind of, when I got home, I got my keyboard out and I'm playing with it. And I'm sort of thinking about different rhythms that might intersect with it. And then it became this hook line, which went. Like this, right? And it's dropping over like a two notes on a bass line. And then I get like a beat and then some other bits and some other structures and then a vocal melody and all sorts of things. Now, people think if I'd have done this in a linear way, that's completely non-linear because I don't know what the song sounds like at the end of it. I have no idea. I do not know ahead of time what the finished product is going to sound like. I haven't even got a clue. I heard an ambulance siren and I began engaging in a creative process. The final piece of music was emergent entirely. This is how everybody writes music. Nobody decides ahead of time exactly what the piece of music sounds like, or I don't think they do, and then just goes, oh, yeah, I know exactly what it's like, and now I just have to follow the steps to bring the thing into the world. But there's a co-creation. A lot of the time when I'm making music, and a lot of professional musicians are the same, mistakes occur. You know, they fluff a line, but they go, oh, that's quite good, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they go, oh, that gives me another idea that I wouldn't have had otherwise, right? So this mistake leads to a whole bunch of other ideas they wouldn't have had otherwise. And then that brings another thought into mind, and then this bit gets pulled in from over here. So again, like every piece of music I ever created was, you cannot connect the dots looking forward, only looking back. I had to engage in the creative process, which was about taking action in the world, because that's how you co-create with anything, with the world, right? So this is what I would say. If people get caught up in their mind and go, well, I've got to get a clear vision in my mind ahead of time before I do anything, I would suggest that's a mistake. I don't think that's how most people create. It's not how Steve Jobs creates, because he says it, you cannot connect the dots looking forward, only looking back.
Yeah. Right? No, it definitely, you use that quote so much in your videos, and I sit in that a lot, because then, you know, my brain goes, well, what do you do? But then I'm hearing, well, just do something.
Right. Look, Greg, where did this podcast come from? How come you're doing this podcast?
Well, you know what? It was a coach that co-created it with me.
Right.
But it came out of... you know, it came out of taking tons of action, and it turned into, you know, conversations like this that I didn't even expect to have happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, there definitely was an impetus to. Well, it also came out of, and this is kind of where I was going to ask you about this. I mean, this is more personal to me in a lot of ways, but this notion of being this. At least it well, I kind of think as I move through this thought that it's irrational because of the way it's played out. Like I've had fantasies, James, of wow, there's so many courses that I've purchased that I haven't taken the time to learn yet or watch yet. So if I just had time is the thing I want, then I would sit there, go through days, maybe work like, a couple hours a day, but then the rest of that time, absorb and learn and read books and study and all this stuff that lights me up. Now, here's what happens. I get into an open day. Maybe work is off that day or something. And my brain starts like going to your videos because I'm going, oh crap. Okay, well, I'm not there. There's not like a linear. How do I make the most of this day? What action should I be taking? And then I get into a course, and after a while, even after reading book after book, it's kind of like eating chocolate over and over. It's like, okay, at a certain point, I need to actually start talking to people. And so the fantasy of this solitary reading books life still doesn't match my desire to connect socially and at some root level be out in the world. And yet, I definitely have this strong attachment to, there's so much left to learn. There's so much I haven't learned yet. So the podcast was kind of birthed out of one step, which is, well, I'm going through these courses. At the very least, I'm going to talk at a higher level about some of the concepts I'm learning and share it with others. And that kind of goes into your whole thing about difference making, which I I mean, I suppose on one level, you could follow these teacher. I mean, I took Steve Chandler's. I was listening to. I bought one of his audios on his Ultimate Time Management System. And then there's Gary Keller, who talks about what's the one thing you could do that would make everything else in your life easier or unnecessary. And I'm going like, well, the one thing I want to be doing right now is picking up this book and learning, but at some level, it seems like it would be easy to just follow that desire and do the one thing, but at the same time, there's no difference making. And then my brain goes, there's so many other things I could be doing right now. So that's kind of like I got to the core of the dilemma of why I had you back on the show. That is kind of where between your mind management stuff and creation dynamics and mastery, I'm going, okay, how do I get the best out of all of it so I can still get my interests in there, but also not let life pass me by?
So, the interesting thing is, well, there's many interesting things there, but one interesting thing is that you did this podcast because you didn't stop yourself.
Yes, that is
Right?
true. That's true.
So this we always know this is true when something gets created versus something doesn't, right? That's one of the things. So we know you didn't stop yourself. Now you're doing a lot of reflection here. This is useful reflection because you get to go, oh, look, you get to know yourself a bit better. What are your current tendencies? How are these things working out? What do you want? Is this making enough of a difference? Now, one of the things, like I said in that video on action versus activity versus task, activity, something like reading books, learning, consuming, because you want to know. Something you said there is like, oh, there's so much to learn. There is. And if you start recognize a pattern that you're learning a lot, or maybe going across the surface but not implementing a lot of the stuff, then recognizing that part of your strategy for doing that is saying to yourself, oh, there's so much to learn. So you're right. That's part of how you're creating it, is buying into the there's so much to learn trance. So I've got to learn more. I've got to learn that. I've got to learn that. I've got to learn that. Now I can relate to that because I'm looking at like hundreds of books in a bookcase right now. People say, have you read all those books? And I say, I've read some of most of them. But I also know that sometimes I've made a commitment and go, I'm going to really learn this topic. I'm going deep into this. So The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace Wattles, I probably read like 20 plus times. When I learned NLP, I'm like, right, I'm learning NLP. I'm going deep into this. So there's breadth and depth. So you might go, well, okay. Now, here's the thing. If I pick for myself, there's so much to learn. I need an antidote to that if I don't want to live that way. So one of the things that I recognized a number of years ago, or one of the things I sometimes remind myself of, is if you take the sum total of all human knowledge, no one person can do anything but scratch the surface in their lifetime.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Because what's to know is infinite. And so the question is, okay, so where am I going to scratch the surface? And I might scratch the surface, and that's actually deep. If I scratch in this particular place, I'm going to get to scratch deeply here, but I'm not going to cover the whole surface. That's never going to happen. Right? I might be able to scratch deeply into the surface in one place or another. So sometimes for myself, I'll take charge of my own process there and go, where do I want to go deeper here? Right? Where do I want to go deeper? I'll resist the temptation to bounce out and go, oh, I'm going to learn about this. I'm going to go and learn about, you know, I'm going to learn the complete works of Carl Jung, and I'm going to, you know, it's like, okay. So sometimes for me, I'll go, what's the stuff that's really making a big difference for me? I'm going to go deep into this for a bit. So if you gave the example of Chandler's time management system, and who was the other person you mentioned?
Gary Keller, who talks about the one thing, finding the one action that's going to move the needle the most in your life for everything.
Yeah. So one of the things that I would do is if I take an idea, I go, I want to really kind of explore with this one. I want to give this one a fair crack at the whip. So instead of going like, oh, I've got these five different things, which one's the right one to choose? Doesn't matter. Which one am I going to choose? I'm going to choose that one or this one. I'm going to do it. I'm going to learn deeply from doing this. Like, I love martial arts. I'm fascinated by a whole array of martial arts, but I need to make a decision from time to time about what I'm going to be spending my time in. And I might spend a few weeks, or I might spend a few months, or I might spend a few years even. But I'm going to spend some time in this martial art, or in this aspect of this martial art. Steve Chandler says time spent with X is the only way to get X. Time spent with developing your conversational hypnosis skills is the only way to develop your conversational hypnosis skills. But if you read a bit about conversational hypnosis and then bounce off somewhere else, you never get to develop those skills.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So there's some choice. There's some curation in our own lives. We've only got a certain amount of time during the day. And this is why, for me, like, I've literally, there's thousands of projects I could think would be great to do. I don't do them because I haven't got the time to do them all. I have to make a decision. I have to choose. It comes back to the I that chooses. What do I choose to do? So I love to be connected to my vision. And I love to go, what am I creating? But oftentimes, I have to come back down to this point, or I choose to come back down to this point where I go, what am I choosing to do today, right now? What's my choice? Now, I know in life, I'm only ever going to scratch the surface. Most of my ideas will never come to fruition. That's okay. There's no rule in the universe that says they must. You know, but there's choice, and there's commitment, and there's things like this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to bring this into the world. By hook or by crook, I'm going to do it. Now, if I choose, by the way, commitment is a huge thing. I don't know if you made a commitment to do this podcast and you went, I'm doing this, or if you just did it bit by bit by bit. But on some level, you made a commitment. You realized it. You stayed in the game. I often teach the only success strategy that works. Get in the game, stay in the game, learn, grow, and adapt. You got in the podcasting game. You stayed in the game. You have a podcast. I don't know what your subscribership is. I like your podcast. I think it's great. I think you're very, very good at doing this podcast hosting. You know, you stayed in it. You let it come into the world. If you'd have gone, oh, podcast is a good idea, you could have talked yourself out of it in a couple of minutes, but you didn't.
Yes.
You stuck with it and you realized it. So you might then ask the question. One of my favorite personal questions is when I've got a project running, or I've got something up and running and it's working or whatever, or I've realized it, I like to ask, okay, so what's next?
Right.
You know, what's next is a real favorite question of mine. What's next? What's next? What's next? you know, I did a book last year. Was it last year? Was it the year before now? Last year, I think. And that was just sheer bloody mindedness, right? I'm going to do a book. I'm going to bring that into the world. Because I've been keeping it out for 10 years with stories of like, well, it's got to be like this, it's got to be like that, or it's not worth doing unless it's like this or it's like that. In the end, I'm going, look, do you want a book or not? Make it so. Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It all seems so simple in a way. But, you know, obviously minds are, can be complex.
Yeah. You know, like the Greek myth of the sirens who would lure the ship onto the rocks.
Yes.
With their singing. So I quite like that myth. And I like to think that it's really about our own minds. It's not really about voyages out there in mythical seas. It's about our own minds. So we can set course for somewhere in our minds, in what we want to create in our lives, but the sirens are going to sing their song and seduce us onto the rocks. Now, the sirens of our own minds are the voices and songs of our smaller selves, our fearful self, our limited self, whatever, you know. And sometimes we hear the songs and we just carry on sailing anyway, but so often the songs, we listen to them and we get lured onto the rocks. And then often when people get lured onto the rocks, they then make up a new song, which is like, see, you didn't have what it takes, or something like that, some kind of new identity level statement that diminishes them yet further. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's just worth being aware of. So I want to hear in my own mind, I want to be listening for the sirens and know that they're the sirens and know that their song isn't truth. It's just a song of seduction to lure me onto the rocks. I want to know this. So I want to listen for it. If I'm out there creating and I hear a little voice going, yeah, but they're not going to take you seriously because they're, or whatever, which is the kind of thing that a person like me might think. I want to go, ah, there you are. You know, how much do I want to be seduced by that idea? Well, not a lot. Because I know where that leads, the rocks. Now, I might not know if I've set a course into uncharted seas, where those uncharted seas lead, right? Maybe there are dragons out there or something, but you know, I prefer to go and find out rather than end up on the rocks again.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's very intriguing about your work, and you know, it's very intellectually stimulating, in addition to, you know, I know that's not the ideal for somebody taking, you know, this mind management workshop you just did about the four elements. If somebody was just sitting there and I've been prone to do this with people's courses, sit there and go, oh yeah, this is cool ideas, it's blowing my mind, da 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 da, and do nothing with it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the ideal. But that said, because you have so many different, I mean, that you've got the be, do, have, you've got these four different elements in the higher mind, lower mind, black path, white path, you know, and just different ways of building a life or taking action moment to moment. You know, is there, do you ever consider, because this is my kind of my struggle here is I might be thinking too much about those things. I'm going, okay, well, I gotta be in the high mind and I need to create non-linearly. And what right. It sounds like is action is better.
Look, one of the things I'm hearing from you right now is I've got to, and I need to. Right. So that jumps right out from what you're saying at the moment. Now, there's a phrase that you've probably heard me use because you've watched enough of my videos, which is there is no rule in the universe that says X. Now, there's a reason that that is part of my internal mind management toolkit. It's because I know that I need to, I've got to, I have to, is just the other side of what's the right way to. And it tends to pull me out of flow, and it tends to pull me into the realm of anxiety and like uncertainty and all of these sorts of things.
Yeah.
Right. So I even said in my last video that I do not do to-do lists. I have possibilities lists.
Yeah. What did you mean by that?
Well, because here's the thing. Obligation is the mother of procrastination. Right. So I can only procrastinate if I have a rule that says you should do that, you must do that, or you have to do that. I've placed an obligation upon myself. Without an obligation, I either do or I don't. There's no procrastination. There's just either action or non-action. So I don't want to create the conditions whereby I feel like I'm, you know, coercing myself or forcing myself or making myself, because as soon as I'm in that place, I'm not connected to vision and inspiration anymore. I've already killed the spark. You know, the enthusiasm is gone. Entheos, the God within, has gone. And this is one of the reasons why I don't like to-do lists. So this is one of the places where I may disagree with Stephen Kotler. For myself, I know they don't serve me. Now, of course, knowing things that I could do that would move my project forward is great. So I leave them in the realm of possibility, and then I get to choose to do them or not. I get to choose which ones I'm going to do, and there's no rule in the universe that says I have to do any of them.
Does the form change? Say it's you know, this book project, and you want to enroll more people into your coaching program. Those are things that are circling in your mind. I mean, how does that look on a possibilities list versus a to-do list?
So a possibilities list just looks exactly like a to-do list, but it's got possibilities list written on the top.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And the only difference is I know full well that I am entirely in my sovereignty to do or not do those things. And there is no rule in the universe that says I must. I get to choose. I also want to recognize that if I've tried to connect, if I've tried to connect the dots looking forward, I might run this gambit on myself. These are all the things you have to do in order to get the result that you want. And if you don't do these things, then you won't get the result that you want. Maybe. But that's linear. It's productivity at best. It's not creativity or generativity, right? I'm not knocking that. Some people are very, very good at being their own taskmasters, but it's never creative.
Yeah.
It's never creative. So if I was trying to create a piece of music and I went, right, what's every step that I need to do to create this piece of music? Well, first of all, I need to do this, and then I'm going to need to do this, and then I'm going to need to do this. It's got nothing to do with creating a piece of music. What I need to do is pick up an instrument and start noodling with it and go, oh, that sounds interesting. Or have an idea and go, well, that would be cool. And then, you know, I've got to take action. I've got to pick up that instrument at some point. I've got to get my hands on the instrument. Now, you mentioned four elements mind management. I didn't have that system fully formulated before I did those webinars. I didn't do that. I had a whole bunch of ideas in a constellation sort of circulating each other and, you know, cross-pollinating with each other. And the point of doing the webinar, and I got COVID during it, which was not great, was to take action. That's not the final iteration of those ideas or those ways of exploring. I wanted to kind of co-create with myself and with people. I use those ideas a lot, and I use them more since doing the program than I was using them before doing the program.
Wow.
Because the act of me going, right, I'm going to now bring this to other people, put that really squarely in my bandwidth, and meant that I was kind of really thinking it, breathing it, living it for the weeks that I was doing the program, the weeks that I was running up to the program. So it created a higher level of engagement with those ideas for myself. And my use of particularly the higher mind, lower mind distinctions has increased hugely, and it's been massively beneficial for me. So I'm doing that kind of stuff all the time now, way more than I was before I put the program out.
That's very cool. And I mean, really interesting insight into your creation process. I guess then it is this question of me placing value judgments on those possibilities. Going, okay, well, could work on one possibility today is that I could promote this podcast more and market it more. Another possibility is that like you, I have a mentalism and magic background, and for some reason, I got this kick recently back into card magic. I just was so I don't need I'd been out of it for years. I kind of thought it was useless for a while, and then all of a sudden, I started looking at my books, and I went to a magic shop, Magic Incorporated in Chicago, and all the classic card stuff got in my mind again, and I went, I want to go read those books again and learn the tricks, and the outside Greg that is judging this has a lot of shoulds. It is going, whoa, you are not doing magic at all. There's no reason to delve into these books. What are you going to do with that? Focus on this project. But I'm trying to make it make sense with possibilities and manifesting this life that I want to create. So, I mean, how would like an oddball or just a left field interest like that that doesn't necessarily seem to have any tangible productive benefit, relate to this?
Well, I'll tell you how it would relate for me. And this is, again, I want to make this clear. I'm not saying this is the way anyone should live their lives. People can live their lives however they want to live their lives. But for me, creation and creativity is always about, it's about the connections that people don't expect to get made between things that would otherwise seem like disparate things, right? Like an ambulance siren and, a potential piece of music or whatever. So it's often what looks like people go, oh, wow, look at that. That's a completely novel thing. But actually all the elements of it existed, but they existed in a space that the person observing didn't put together. Only the creator put them together, wove them together. So people will often, something people say to me reasonably often, I've heard it more than once, several times, is, oh, James, you're the only guy doing any original thinking in the world of hypnosis. Now, I'm not saying that's true. I'm sure there are other people who are doing original thinking, but I'm very happy that people say that. But the question is, why do they say that? And the reason they say that is because a lot of my ideas about hypnosis don't come from the world of hypnosis. They come from the world of martial arts, or they come from the world of sales, or they come from the world of improv theater, or they come from, the world of magic or mentalism or something like this. So they show up because I go, I might have gone off and when I did improv theater for a bit, I'm just going, wow, so much of this stuff applies to being effective as a hypnotist. So I played with those improv theater ideas in the realm of hypnosis and then came up with a whole bunch of stuff that people go, oh, wow, this is like really original because it's not just the same old trance inductions being taught again and again. I'm like, it's original in the world of hypnosis, not in the world of improv theater. It's not original. So for me, I explore different realms and things become metaphors for other things. So my martial arts is so often provides me with metaphors for other aspects of life or other skills that I'm doing or working on. So I see it all as being part of the one on, the ongoing creative process. If my inspiration is like explore this deeply, I will do it and I will go for it. But I want to see how it fits into the bigger picture of things. It isn't always going to work out well. I just spent the last 2 years going so deep into martial arts. My income has dropped massively because I don't make any money from martial arts. Now I'm kind of going, oh, okay. Maybe it's time to redirect my attention to other things. But if all of that stuff is of and will be of and will continue to be of huge value to me. So for me, living as a creator, living as a creative force, you are creating with the world. And partly, you said about genius right at the beginning of this call.
Yeah.
We never explored it. there's an old idea. Our modern idea of genius is that genius is something you are. You are a genius, or you are not a genius. Whereas, as I understand it, the concept when it originated was not that anybody was a genius, but the genius came through people.
Yes.
You know, that something new, something unforeseen comes through a person. And often it comes through as a result of disparate connections they made because they engaged with the world. They were out in the world engaging with different things. There's an idea from Brian Eno that there's no such thing as genius, only senius, i.e. the scene that you hang out on, all the different minds coming together, all stimulating each other, is what creates the fresh new ideas. And that a person in isolation doesn't do anything. Right. And if you're in isolation, when I say in isolation, it doesn't mean isolation from other people necessarily. It could be an isolation from other ideas or other aspects of life or whatever. So without sufficient diversity in your experience and your interests, creativity gets stifled.
Right. Right. Yeah. Very interesting. This is all great stuff. And I'm curious, you know, I know we're not going to tie it all together, but when it comes to wealth creation, that's something that I know you've talked about a little bit in this, or in exploring this, is that, I mean, it made sense when I heard you talk about difference making. I went, oh yeah, no, I mean, look, if I'm going to be sitting here and just reading card tricks, no one's going to be paying for that. But the difference making is when I take those card tricks or something that I learn from the magic, and then I'm engaging with other people in the world or the world for other people to see. And then after that, there's, well, I don't know. I'm curious in your mind, what do you view wealth as if it's not just value?
Okay. So wealth and value in my mind are different things. Value doesn't really exist outside of judgment. And that's an important thing to be aware of. It is not objective. Value is subjective entirely. So to give an example, if I acquire the Mona Lisa from the gallery that it's currently in, the Louvre or something like that, and I disappear into the wilds of the Amazon jungle, and I find some tribe in the Amazon jungle, if I took away their spears and their everyday tools that they used to live their life and gave them the Mona Lisa, they probably wouldn't experience that as a good value exchange. But if, of course, we went the other way around and we were in Paris and I managed to acquire the Mona Lisa for a few spears and crude hand tools, I would think, whoa, you know, that was a good deal.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, the Mona Lisa, for example, isn't inherently valuable. It's like valuable to whom, in what context, and by what criteria, and all of these sorts of things. Now, it's important to recognize that value is entirely subjective. It's not objective. It is entirely subjective. If you want to start working with money, particularly, because money ends up being a vehicle for value in our society, and people have all sorts of hang-ups around money and all sorts of weird ideas about how it works. Money is like pure alchemy. It's magic.
Right.
And it doesn't really exist objectively. It's just it's an alchemical tool, in a sense, in my view. Now, wealth, on the other hand, well, what's wealth? Well, wealth is resources and access to resources. This is my definition of wealth. So if I used to spend my summers in Santa Monica for a while. I have been out for a few years because of the COVID thing and all of that. But there's a sort of growing homeless problem in Santa Monica, more in Venice than Santa Monica, right? Santa Monica, keep it out. So you just go down out of Santa Monica into Venice. And then you've got all these tents up the streets. Now, you could say, well, those people don't have wealth. Well, actually, they do. Because that guy over there has got a shopping cart and a tent And, oh, like he's got a sofa as well. And there's a guy down on the beach there with a sofa, or this guy's got a bike or something like that. So anything that you've got that you can use is wealth. If I live in a field and there's a tree in the field and that tree provides me shade and I get to use that shade, that's part of my wealth. I could take the tree, I could chop it up and turn it into furniture. And then I've got some furniture, but I don't have a tree. And I need to decide whether the furniture is worth more to me than the shade of the tree, perhaps. So wealth is resources. And you could also say that wealth is also resources that are less tangible, like good quality relationships, knowledge. Knowledge is resource. It's not just material things. Like if you know stuff that gives you the ability to solve certain problems. I just got off the train today. My daughter, who's 16, she uses the buses a lot here in Edinburgh. I never use the buses. She's got a Young Scot pass, so she can use the buses for free, and she goes around with her friends on the buses. I don't know anything about the buses here in Scotland or in Edinburgh. So we get off the train. We want to get back to our apartment. I'm like, oh, Lois, how are we going to get back? We've got heavy bags. She's like, oh, here's the bus we need. We need to do this. That's wealth. It's part of her wealth set. It's her knowledge of the bus system. People go, really? Yeah, really. And enables her to function more effectively than I can in a particular context. So it gives her something. So for me, wealth is anything that's a resource that gives me the edge to be able to do the things I want to do in the world or create the differences I want to create in the world. Money is a means for the transfer of wealth. The more money you've got, the more problems you can solve easily and effortlessly because you can just chuck money at it. You don't need to have specialist knowledge or anything. If my car breaks and I don't have any money to fix it, then I need a lot of knowledge about cars and how they work to be able to fix it. And I need to be able to get the parts somehow. If I've got a bunch of money, I just take it somewhere and go fix the car. So these are different things, wealth, money and value. They're different things. They're not the same things. They relate to each other in various ways, but they're not the same thing. Now, if you want to be able to do anything in the world, you need to know how to do it. Kind of makes sense, right? If I want to ride a bike, I need to know how to ride a bike. If I want to be able to play chess and win, I need to understand some things about chess. I need to have an understanding. Now, good chess players have a different understanding of chess than bad chess players. You could say they have a higher chess consciousness. When they look at the chessboard, they see, instead of seeing a bunch of pieces and someone who doesn't have a very good chess consciousness, they don't know what those pieces mean. They don't see any implications in the relationships between those pieces. Good chess player can see all sorts of possibility in the configuration on a board because of what they know about chess, because of their chess consciousness. Anything can be treated as a game, right?
Right.
So if you are looking to create wealth, well, people who are good, people who are adept at wealth creation, or if you're looking to make money, let's put it into money. Let's stay away from wealth and look at money. If you want to be able to make money, there are some people that have a good money consciousness, a good understanding of money, how it works, how it's made. Which relates to understanding value as well, I think. So if you want to get good at chess, you need to develop your chess game. You need to develop your chess consciousness. If you want to get good at money making, you need to develop your money making game and your money making consciousness. A good chess player thinks about chess very differently from a bad chess player. And a good money maker thinks about money very differently from a bad money maker.
I know that You even put up there's a webinar on your YouTube channel, which we're going to link to, James Tripp Chaos Wave, about building a business head. Is that what you mean?
Well, yeah, in a sense, I can't quite remember the content of that video, but I could have a fair guess on it. It's like at one point, I think I do remember the content of that video. I used to tell people that I didn't have a good head for business. I just thought that it was a fact about me. It's just true. Some people have a good head for business, some people don't. Now I would say you have the business consciousness that you have, and you can evolve the business consciousness that you have. And that would be building a good head for business. It's like, well, what's the set of understandings that I need to be able to effectively operate in this domain? The same as my daughter has a better understanding of how to get around on public transport in Edinburgh. I don't have a clue. So I defer to her higher level of consciousness in that particular realm.
Is there a way then to get this money consciousness and business head through the playful creation frame that we've been talking about this entire time? Sure.
I mean, so there are a variety of different ways of doing it. Now, one good start point is modeling. I mentioned the Richard Branson biography. You mentioned the Richard Branson biography. If I read an autobiography like that, one of the things that I'm doing is I'm trying on that way of being in the world. I'm imagining how it would be to be that way. I'm also listening to the beliefs and the belief structures and going, oh, that's an interesting rendering of reality. How would it be if I saw the world like that? So I want to try that on. So it's modeling. I'll use a lot of modeling to do it.
Oh, I wanted you to do a video about this or talk about it. Is that, I forget the term you use. I know the word semantic in there.
Yeah, like, so this is what I would call speculative semantic modeling. Sometimes yes. I look at, I'm curious. Like, look, I've done a lot of coaching over the years. I've coached a lot of people. And they come from different mindsets and different cultures. I've coached a lot of creators. I've coached a lot of military vets. I've coached frontline police detectives, done a little chunk of that. Now, different people who operate in different games and different cultures tend to see the world in particular ways. And you start to get a sense of how they see the world, how they make up their reality. With the conceptual renderings, as sometimes call it. If I wanted to be a good police detective, I'd find a good police detective, and I'd be really curious about how they make sense of their life, their job, their role. I want to know about the sense they make. What are the concepts they're using to make sense? How familiar are they to me? How alien are they to me? How do they compare with the concepts I'd use to make sense of that situation? So again, I'm exploring with meaning-making and sense-making, not arguing about what is or isn't so. Ideas are not facts. Everybody makes sense of the world through their ideas. So I want to find people that think like that. If I wanted to develop my leadership game, for example, I go, all right, I want to find leaders and hang out with leaders, and I want to get a sense of how they make sense of things. How do they see things? How do they think about this? If I wanted to get good at chess, I go find good chess players and start finding out how they think about chess. Right? That's the way you do it. Now, when I say speculative semantic modeling, this is where I'm modeling people more from afar. And I look at their behavior. And I think to myself, what would need to be true for them in the world in order for them to be behaving that way? Right?
Right.
So I might see somebody like, if I see somebody who's just skiing down a mountainside, and I might say, what would need to be true in their beliefs, not in their skills or capabilities? Obviously, they need to ski. Like, what would need to be true for them to be tackling this slope in this way, right? And I might go, well, they know they can handle it. Or they might go, you know, they might turn around and say, oh, this will be a great challenge. Now, I know if they say that they value challenge. I know that's part of what's driving them. I picked that as an example because years ago, when I was modeling a number of people who were good at creating results and were prolific creators in the world, I recognized a common element among them was that they all valued challenge. And I didn't.
Hmm.
And I recognized that if I were to continue to not value challenge, then I wouldn't be going to be getting the kind of results that they got, because I wouldn't be doing the kinds of things they'd be doing. So I had to shift my value system. So I started to value challenge and enjoy challenge.
Wow.
This is an example.
Yeah. Very interesting.
That came from speculative semantic modeling. But this is a thing that people don't realize. They go, well, how can I change what I value? Well, first of all, the clue is in the name, value. You start valuing it.
Right, right. It's a verb.
Yeah, yeah.
Self-love. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a, or love in general.
Yeah.
It, do you, in terms of speculative semantic modeling, was there a language, is there a language within that that, you know, one can familiarize themselves with to even be able to speak about others' beliefs? Or is it simply just looking at them and saying, oh, asking that question?
Well, look, here's how I sort of came about this method, because there was no intention to it. Again, you cannot connect dots looking forward, only looking backwards. I initially learned about modeling, and I learned really like the basic or top level concept of modeling, but nobody told me how to do it. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I started to do modeling, and obviously initially I was making notes about people's behavior and things like this, but simultaneously I was learning a lot about how we make up our reality through our ideas or concepts and beliefs. This sort of thing, our conceptual material, our sense making. So once I started to get a sense of this, I just put the two together. Now, by the way, something, this relates to felt sense. People do not realize this, but every concept that you access changes your biochemistry.
Huh.
Right? And this is according to Lisa Feldman Barrett, neuroscientist Lisa Feldman Barrett. She talks about body budgeting, because like if I go danger, my body chemistry has to change. That's a really extreme example. That's a threat. My body chemistry has to change in the moment to prepare my body to meet that in an appropriate way. Now, every single way of making sense subtly adjusts our body chemistry. Now, this starts to make sense in terms of felt sense, because our interoceptive systems, they're evolutionarily there to tell us about the condition of our body. So if I subtly change the way I think about something and it changes what Lisa Feldman Barrett would call my body budgeting, it changes my physiological state. That means every conceptual rendering of anything is going to change your physiological state. And sometimes it's going to move you more towards that thing or more away from that thing. So I'm constantly, when I'm doing speculative semantic modeling, I'm changing the sense making I'm doing, but I'm feeling into my felt sense system. What does this create within me when I think about it like this? I use this a lot in coaching, by the way. I was coaching somebody a couple of days ago, and they were saying, oh, I'm just not exercising at the moment. Just not exercising. You know, I canceled my gym membership because I thought I was moving, but I've ended up not moving and I haven't got back into exercising. How, you know, what do I need to do to motivate myself? I said, well, first thing first, when you think about exercising, what comes up in your body? What does that create in your body? What do you feel? It's like, oh, just a kind of sense of low energy, and he's pulling this face. Now, so the idea exercise creates a state of unmotivation in him.
Yes.
So first of all, I said, right, for a start, this is not a useful way to think about it. It might be the common way it gets talked about in society at large, but that doesn't mean it's a useful way of thinking about it for you. Right? So I asked him, I said, so just to use the word one last time, what are you looking to create through exercising? And he's like, he said, I know this sounds like, this probably sounds really weird, but I just kind of like, when I'm in shape, I just feel more powerful. And I said, right, so you know that feeling more powerful? And he's like, yeah. I said, well, so when you think about that and see that yourself, what does that create in you? He's like, oh yeah, that's like, I said, does that move you closer to you at your best or further from? Closer to. So you want to make sure that you're conceptually rendering things in a way that have you feel like more expanded, more empowered. And then the way of sense making is going to serve you. So if you think of any situation, if the way you're making sense of it has you move away from that situation, but you're going, I really should move towards it. Well, instead of getting into an argument with yourself and going, I should move towards it. Come on, what's wrong with you? Move towards it. Instead, you have to go, how am I creating moving away? What's the conceptual rendering that creates moving away? And what's the conceptual rendering that would create a sense of, yes, I want that. That would be cool. Right?
Yes. Yes.
So this is the skill of it. This is the art of it. And it's a skill set. People get better and better and better at doing this, working with their own sense making, working with their own felt sense. And this is what I mean by creating a being that has you engaged doing in a way that creates the results that you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh, James, there's so much here. I mean, I could do another 3 hours. This is, we did 2 hours this time.
Yeah.
I know, but this is so good. Everybody needs to check out James Tripp, Chaos Wave. That's where you can find the latest stuff going on. This is such a mind-blowing episode. I know I have to wrap up, but let me see. I don't know if this is going to be a simple question or it could be a simpler question answer than I think. But do you do time management? Do you have a time management system?
I have a personal, I would do personal management maybe, and mind management more than time management. And I have done time management because I was coached by Steve Chandler and I used his non-linear time management method and got a lot of value from that. So most of what people call time management is actually task management, not time management. But look, I know that I've got time and I've got energy. I know this much, time and energy. I want to look after my time and energy. I've always got the same amount of time, 24 hours in a day. Energy, that fluctuates more depending on how I look after myself, and you know, all sorts of variables can either add to or detract from energy. I know that those are my two primary resources. Those are my two primary resources. Going back to wealth again, and talking about wealth in terms of resources, those are my two primary resources, time and energy. So I want to be careful about those, looking after those. And time, I want to be careful about where I'm deploying it. Because in a sense, we all have the same amount of time. We have 24 hours in a day, but we don't have the same amount of time because we don't know how long we're going to be here. So I'm 48 now. And that means that I have less time for things that are not producing what I want in my life, because I'm thinking I'm probably half done or more than half done. So I want to, you know, I want to deploy my time more effectively. So I'm constantly making choices. Do I want to put time and energy and effort into that? I was speaking to somebody earlier who was saying they just fired a member of their team. This is a business person. And they were saying they had done it reluctantly because they thought that they could coach this member of the team into being the effective member of the team that they wanted them to be. And my view was, no, you're better off firing them. Now, that sounds funny coming from a guy who's a coach. It's just that if I've got a business team and I want to be creating something with that team, I want to just get the team that's going to create it, because that's a better use of my time and energy than coaching people who are not a good fit into being a good fit as a member of the team, right?
Yeah.
So I am making decisions about time and energy all the time, but I wouldn't necessarily say I have a system. I have a mind management system more and a focusing system more.
Right, right. So there is a prioritization over things that more align with the higher mind and this vision. But you're not sitting there doing what we discussed earlier, which is this constant, what should I prioritize? What do I want to, it's more where it's coming from,
right?
Where you're the chooser.
Yeah. And again, I would like, I know this might seem like a hair splitting thing, but again, when you were saying, what should I prioritize? Shoulds are a massive red flag for me.
Exactly. Oh no, so I want to get away from the shoulds.
Right. So I know what they do to my energy and my time. because shoulding is, again, a sucker's game, because it's a mind-made construct. It's actually related to value in some ways. So I want to, you know, I want to know these things. I want to know myself. Know thyself is not just knowing your personality traits and this kind of thing. Like, on a deeper level, it's knowing how you're making up the reality. The sorts of ideas that you think of are as innocuous or whatever, but are they contributing to your energy or taking you away from your energy? Are they contributing to your focus, or are they detracting from your focus? Do they bring you more into flow or more out of flow? You know, and a lot of people are habitually caught up in ways of thinking about things that take them out of motivation and creative flow.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So good. James Tripp, hey, thank you so much for coming on again. This has been amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit with all of this. This has been great. We'll definitely have to have you again. James Tripp, Chaos Wave, check it out. So good. I'm very grateful for your time.
And I really enjoyed being on here. I enjoyed the conversation. I enjoyed the last conversation, wanted to come on again, because you have a genuinely inquiring mind and therefore ask good questions.
Thank you, James. That means a lot.
Thank you.
Love James Tripp's works. And you know what? One of my favorite acting teachers in school was a guy named James Tripp. He was really up there in age, but may he rest in peace. James Tripps are the best teachers. And if I were you, I would sign up for the Nexus. You want to create something in your life? You want to have James overseeing it? Sign up for the Nexus membership. The link is in the show notes. I want to thank Ronnie McGilvery for the theme music. I want to thank the natural fade out of this music, because I've never thanked this specific moment before. Thank you, DeCrescendo.